Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today, our topic is No Longer a Polite Society by Catherine Raker. She's a well-known producer, executive producer of two television shows, The Shelf, You and I, born for 64. If you'd like to speak with her, please give us a call at 347-324-3460, 347-324-3460. Or you can post your question in the chat room, and I'm going to read it on the air. Also, she is a host of a syndicated show called Let's Just Talk Show. So, Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be on your show.
Great. Thank you so much. I guess I was really intrigued with your topic, No Longer a Polite Society. Kind of tell us about what we are today and how you come to talk about this particular topic.
Well, actually, when you think about it, and I'm a lot older, and I remember when we did have a polite society where people were a little kinder. They weren't, they weren't mean on the roads. They would open the door for you. They would do so many different things. They wouldn't use the languages that they use today. With social networking, with everything going kind of viral, it's made us into a society that we forget sometimes our common courtesies, and we forget that we are a polite society, and it comes from us. It's not just kids. It's not just teenagers. It's not, it's many, many different factors. I mean, we become so busy in life that we forget the niceties. And that's the sad part about what's happened to our society. And, I mean, you can see it in everything from your workplace to your to going to a theater, to a show, to a movie, where you'll see people sitting in front of you with their cell phone on, knowing that they're not supposed to have it on. They're talking in church. They're talking everywhere. They never seem to think that there's, they think it's right. They don't think it's wrong. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. The word polite means, kind of tell us what the word polite means.
Actually, you're gracious enough to maybe give you an example. You're polite to someone so that you would open up yourself to, say, for instance, a courtesy. You open the door, someone asks you a question, and you come back with an answer that's not short or sweet, maybe especially, and you say, thank you, pardon me, may I ask you that question again? That would be polite instead of huh, why, where, what, and it's asking, it's actually using sentences. It's actually being kind enough to listen to someone or to respond to someone.
Why do you think how society from the 50s and we're really, really polite to each other and kind of give or take, but we always have that same respect and courtesy towards people. Of course,
Let me say this to you. It's taught at home. It's taught.
Okay.
It used to be taught at school. There used to be etiquette classes. There used to be manners. There used to be things that I grew up in a family of seven children, and I was the oldest. If we ever mouthed off to my mom, we would either be punished, grounded, something would happen. If we did not, if we were not polite, we knew about it. It would happen automatically, you know. So it was being courteous. It was being, it's like not talking in church or not interrupting people. We knew because our parents taught us those manners, those niceties. It was just part of our education as a child. And I grew up in the 50s and 60s. And I'll tell you what, if we crossed that line, we knew about it. Today, we have children and teenagers that mouth off to their parents like they were just, you know, one of their friends or one of their enemies. And I don't know how you grew up, but I can tell you one thing. I did that to my mother? Huh, forget it. I'd be grounded forever.
That's the easiest way. When I grew up and back in that time, we were threatened with physical assault.
well, we were threatened with, you know, the teacher actually taking a ruler and hitting your hand if it was a sister or nun, if it was a teacher, and those were some of the things that maybe we learned from that. But you know, my mom and dad didn't beat us or anything like that. They just, you know, let us see, you know, why this was really important, you know, why it was important for us to thank people, why it was important for us to be polite and courteous with others, especially seniors, especially, our relatives that might be just a little older than we are, you know. Today, I have to tell you what happened just a few days ago. I was in traffic. And
oh my gosh.
Actually, there was a senior who, you know, and I was kind enough, you know, to signal, to wave, to whatever, to let him know that I needed to get into the other lane because I would have missed it. And do you know that he was so nasty to me, I couldn't even believe it. And I thought, this is an aggressive driver. This isn't being polite. This is being weird. And, you know, you never know today if somebody's got a gun in a car and they may shoot you. You know, so it happens in all of our lives every day where people can either be nice and polite or they can be mean and crazy and you know, crude.
Wow. Yeah, and see, well, I grew up in a Catholic environment, Catholic school. And
I did too.
You know, there's a way that they
my uncle's more Jesuit priest. I know what it's like. Hello.
Yeah, like I said, threatened with physical assault, either with the ruler or a teacher or something like that. And that was the way they handled things back in the day until that 1979 book came out that students have rights when things start to change. But you know, a different time.
But I think it went a little overboard. To be very honest about it. I mean, and then parents went overboard in the use of foul language and the use of a lot of things that have changed over the years, you know, that the four-letter word is very common in almost every, you know, if you, it doesn't matter if it's a big city or a small town or kids are using social networking. I mean, some of the stuff I see on Facebook, some of the stuff that I see, you know, on Twitter and all these social medias, it just, it would, my mother would have just, I wouldn't have ever come out of the room.
Wow. Do you think because of Facebook, I mean, it has its advantages and disadvantages and Twitter and so forth, you communicate, but you communicate on a non-personal level. They can communicate with a device, but when you're in front of the person, they can't communicate. I've seen, yeah, and it seemed like it's a disconnect. I mean, I used to tease my my niece when I was teaching school in the 90s, and I was a teacher, and she was with me during the summer, and I took care of her during the summer months because I was a teacher, so mostly I'm at home, and I had the only time I was away is probably during church on Sunday when I got busy. But I see her and the neighbor across the street emailing each other. I say, well, what are you doing? I'm emailing. Nancy. I said, well, Nancy, just across the street.
You can walk across the street.
You can walk across the street or pick up the phone. She said, well, no, I'm just waiting for her to email me back. I mean, it's that type of trend.
It's almost a form of laziness that we don't want to connect, that we're afraid to connect physically,
in person.
And I think the other part of that is today bullying has become something that people don't ever think about. I mean, I actually personally know two or three people that committed suicide over terrible bullying on the internet, on Facebook. And kids, I don't think, and parents, and I really want to put this back into the parents' backyard, into their front yard, into their home. They need to be watching. They need, you know, kids want direction today. They need direction today. Not that they didn't need it before, but our parents were more active in our growing up, our formative years, than I think a lot of parents are today. They take their kids to every kind of practice. They, you know, they do all of that. But then when it comes to their Facebook, to their, you know, this other part of their lives, they're not watching.
Wow.
And they're not observing some of the things. And when you think of the predators that are out there, where, you know, young girls put really weird pictures of themselves up on Facebook, and they say the most outrageous things. And I understand that that's being a teen. That's being a young person that's trying out new things. But in some respects, it's extremely frightening.
Absolutely. Why is this trend that now I don't want to be raised the way, I don't want to raise my children the way that my parents did. I want them to raise my child as a friend. You think we're losing control of our role as a parent?
I mean, I'm not saying, and I'll tell you the reason why. Because children want guidance more so than friendship. I mean, I can say that my daughter and I are friends. But as far as, you know, the education and her moral structure, I think guidance, I think that parents need to be parents. You know, you can be friendly with your children. You can really have a good time with them. But you can't be total friends with them and not correct them and not do, you know, because I think kids really want that. They want parents to guide them. They don't want them as best friends in the respect of that part of their education. And I think that you're doing a disservice to your children by doing that. You know, a lot of people that are friends with their children don't care about their morality. They don't care about them coming home at different times. But then they're shocked if that child becomes pregnant. They're shocked if that child runs away. They're shocked at things that, you know, if there was that type of guidance, there was that type of care, that they would be more aware of it.
Well, if we go back to, you know, certain situations when it comes to the parent themselves. And I've seen some situations that a parent will allow the person to allow their children to consume alcohol as a teenager. Only one person would say only in the presence of their home than versus allowing them to drink outside. Do you think that's a good role as being a parent?
No. Because
you're encouraging
your child knowing the effects of alcohol. And you're saying, oh, it's all right. I'd rather you do it here in front of me and not somebody else's home. I mean, you're encouraging the wrong thing here. I mean, the reason why kids you know, think it's okay is because Johnny's mother said we can do it at his house, okay, and it's all right as long as we do it in front of the parents. That doesn't give the child guidance. That gives the child an open situation to become either addicted or, you know, trying anything and everything because the parents said, well, do it in front of me. It's like cigarettes. Or it's like prescription drugs. Oh, just take one of those prescription drugs, but you can do it in front of me. What's the difference mm-hmm. between that and alcohol?
No difference.
No difference. So, you know, I think that is, you know, not to say that it never happens, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's an invitation to really hurting your child. Where did they learn it? You know, if the parent is abiding, you know, is the one that's, you know, the parent could be an alcoholic and is encouraging their child to drink along with them. Is that what we want? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all.
I may be old-fashioned in some respects, but, you know, you know, my kids actually thanked me years later for being mm-hmm. a little stricter, about caring, you know, and I was a teacher too. So I was watching them a lot. You know, in a lot of respects, not to say they didn't try things behind my back and that they weren't perfect children. And they did mm-hmm. have timeouts and they did get punished and they did get grounded. But, you know, they appreciated that care about them because they had friends that their parents didn't care. And where were they most of the time? They were with my family because they mm-hmm. wanted that structure. They wanted that structure.
Absolutely. It's kind of strange, you know, you get into a certain age that your child actually, you know, the parent become embarrassing. See, don't drop me off too close to school. Don't get to my classroom. And I guess I don't see this as well because a lot of the parents are now your friends. I guess you can take it twofold, you know, a certain age that the parents now is embarrassment to the kid. And if they're inviting you to come with their friends, that should be something to alert you. That, hey, I think the line has moved somewhere, has been construed. Now they consider you the true friend. But mm-hmm. it's really, really scary.
And I don't know when you probably said this to your parents or to your grandparents or whatever, somebody that was an authority or a structured person in your world, that, you know, when you're like in your 20s or 30s, all of a sudden you call your mom or your dad or whatever and say, or you write them a note and say, gee whiz, Mom, gee whiz, Dad, now I understand. Or when you have your first child and you really get what being a parent or being an authority figure, even as a teacher, you know, mm-hmm. what it's really all about and how, you know, that student, I remember a student years ago that never spoke. I was her teacher at the time, and I would always start my classes out, there's no mistakes in art, that's why pencils have erasers. And this mm-hmm. young man had listened to me, and there was another young gentleman that came into our class, and he's a very talented artist. And he kept tearing things up, and all of a sudden, this meek, quiet little voice came out and said, there's no mistakes in art, that's why pencils have erasers. Don't tear that up. And I almost fell on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to say, and I couldn't say anything in the classroom. I waited until time for lunch. And, I said to him, I said, that was such a kind, sweet thing that you did for that child. You really encouraged him. And, you know, this young man, he had nothing but trauma in his life. And he always did all of his art in black and white, and then it just hit me. Now I know why he does everything in black and white, because he didn't ever see the color in life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we really affect people more than we think we do. And here's this young guy who's only like 10 or 11 years old that really thought about that other child.
Hmm.
So, you know, we don't know how we affect people, you know, no matter if it's a parent or it's a guardian or it's a teacher or if it's a coach or whatever, you know. And then we emulate people. You know, if we hear dirty language or we hear things, kids do it because of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, why do adults do it? What do they need to do it for? You know, do we not know the English language, or we like to try to learn new words? You know, those are the things that I think about sometimes when I hear a comedian or someone that uses almost every word as a four-letter word. It really shocks me still.
Mm-hmm. Wow. We're going to take a station break real quick and be back in less than a minute. Again, with Catherine Raker, she's talking about no longer a polite society. Be back in one moment. Take a station break. Be back.
You're listening to The Core Business Show, sponsored by Apple Capital Group. Apple Capital Group in Jacksonville, Florida, is a commercial lender that specializes in asset-based loans, equipment leasing and financing, invoice financing, commercial real estate loans, and asset-based financing in the U.S. and Canada. Apple Capital Group is a direct lender that lends on their private equity investment portfolio. 90% of most loans are decided within 2 hours, and vendor funding within 24 hours after documents are completed with a one-page application. No slow no's, just a quick decision and a fast yes. To get more information about lending from Apple Capital Group, call 866-611-7457. That's 866-611-7457 to speak with one of our loan specialists. Or visit us right now at applecapitalgroup.com. Welcome back to The Core. Once again, here's Tim Jacquet.
We're back with Catherine Raker again, who's talking about no longer polite society. I guess to kind of put it in a nutshell, what can we do as a society to train our kids and train our other things like employees and employers to be a little bit more polite? Any self-books you suggest or any resources we can use to try to get back in focus?
I think that there's wonderful self-help books. I think there are wonderful things out on the internet today under Google, under Polite Society. I think there are tips that we can do as employers. I think that we can bring things back to a polite society very easily. We have to start thinking outside the box. We have to start thinking how we can incorporate just, you know, maybe, you know, so many Americans want rewards all the time for everything that they do. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know. But, you know, when I hear someone at a baseball game or a football game or something like that, and they're rude, crude, and indifferent, and they're really, you know, bothering me, I smile at them and I say something very simple. Do you think you could tone it down? Do you think you could change what you're saying in such a nice way that they least expect, instead of inciting a riot, you incite something with a smile. With, you know, it doesn't make any difference if it's at an airport, if it's a taxi, whatever it is. And when you get in your car, you know, maybe you need to play some music or something that's going to keep you happy instead of infuriated or frustrated. Stay off the cell phone when you're in the car. You know, do things that you wouldn't, you know, normally do. I mean, a lot of people, it drives me crazy to get on a highway and see somebody putting makeup on while they're driving. And then they wonder why they're going to have a crash. Or, you know, you're talking on the phone or you're texting while you're driving. I mean, if you get into an accident, of course you're going to get sued, okay? But before you get into a situation, sit down and think about it before you get into the car. If you're angry at somebody, take some deep breaths. If you're in traffic and you've stopped somewhere, start singing. Do something that is out of the ordinary that's going to get you back to being that calm person. And, you know, a smile takes more muscles in your facial expression than a frown does. And I know these things sound weird, but you know what? If we use them, we'll be very surprised that they do work. With a child, that is trying to shock you, especially with their language or their attitude. You know, sit down with them on a regular basis and say, George or Harry or whatever the child's name is, what would you do in this circumstance? I want you to figure this out. And then apply what you think is going to be the solution to it. So, you know, if you challenge people, they will turn around and surprise you. You know, it's like somebody that never knew how to speak or to eat. Have you ever seen somebody sit down at a table and take their fork and not do it very politely, do it like it's your caveman? Well, that person probably never knew, you know, the way to actually eat anything. So if you could assist them in any way, shape, or form, or show them without showing them, it'll help.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, if you look at it in an employee setting, is it something as employers can do? Because I think they run into personalities all the time. And you have people with different backgrounds in a business setting.
I think when you put employees together, you know, when you're hiring employees, you know, where everybody just seems to get along so well. You know, when you're looking to hire someone, look at their background. Look at the way they react in not just the interview, but in other circumstances. It was really strange. I have to tell you about this because it was really weird. I was hiring one time when I worked at a secretarial service, and actually we did other people's work. And it was funny because I was doing an interview with someone, and then we wanted that person to be trained. They were part-time, actually, and we were going to bring them on full-time. That person could not take directions, could not or would not change their attitude. And once we saw that, and we were sitting behind a glass mirror that only went one way, and we were watching the part-time employee work with somebody from, you know, like a Xerox machine or whatever. And after seeing the experience, we said, we can't hire this person full-time. They're not going to be able to take direction. So even in the beginning of the process of hiring someone, you can find out a lot of different things about that person or that would-be employee. Does the employer care enough about the person to reward them for really good work? Do we actually pat our employees on the back when they do a great job or they care about it? Or do we inspire them to do different things? Mm-hmm. You know, do we listen when there's problems with other employees with each other? Do we sit them down? Do we do the things we should do to make it easier? I know lots of companies out there that have been in these situations, and it all comes out in the rain. It all comes out because there's a line of communication, a line of caring about that person. You know, there's a company that I work with all the time, and I don't mind using their name, Ultimate Air Shuttle. They have employees that have never left. They love the company. They love the way they're treated. They treat the customer with is a gold nugget. They treat that customer just like they want to be treated. And it says a lot about the company. Everybody loves them. Everybody loves flying with them because they care about your safety, your comfort, your everything about you. Now, that comes from the top, and it comes all the way down through the employees. So if you want a really good company and you really want good employees and you don't want to have tension and stress all the time, there's certain things that you build in to your company that make it easy for people to work and enjoy what they're doing instead of it being drudgery.
Absolutely. I mean, you have a lot of success stories, which is, you know, kind of a different culture. You have your Southwest airline who keeps things fun and Easy, and you have some other companies that are similar to that, same different style, and it seemed like they're happier, they're having fun on their job, and they make the job go a lot easier. Then you have some that are in opposite areas, and it seemed like they're so antiquated, and it seemed like the corporate is breathing down their back and doing this and that. They're not happy employees. They have high turnover, and nobody really wants to be there. They're just doing it for the check. So maybe they're not being polite, but it's a dictatorship type of mentality, and it kind of tells you same company, same income, but however, you have happy employees and you have a happier company. But, you know, it's one thing is by having a business, a lot of interviewers have is this sense of, hey, I'm interviewing for this particular position, and you meet the representative, but you don't really meet the person. So when you hire them, slowly you're going to start to meet the real person. And in the meantime, you're meeting their representative of that real person until you actually get them, you know, if you decide to hire them. Now you're hiring the person. And also, you have people who've been with a company for a long time, and life circumstances change out of age or sickness or family stressors, and they start to lose it. So is there in that type of situation, you know, hey, let's plan for a company retreat. Let's plan a half a day in service and just spend a Saturday and talk about being polite and working as a team in that sense, even if it's for 4 hours.
Team building. Remember, team building and Outward Bound and all of those things were really great successes because you had to work as a team. You had to support that other person from falling or whatever. And I think every company should institute that into their part of their fabric of their company, because happy employees bring happy results and help your bottom line.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And companies that reward their workers, no matter, you know, that's the reason why I think the One television program has done so well, because the boss really goes behind the scenes and really finds out what his people think of him.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't do that, and I mean, I own my own company, and I contract a lot of my workouts. And, you know, I follow up with it because my clients are the people that are getting those contractual workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're affected by it. And if they love them, they're going to keep on hiring me back or keeping me on board. You know, so, you know, that's important. I mean, if you don't like your job, start your own company. Start something that you really thought you would like to do. You know, I got tired of teaching after a while because I got tired of all the administration situations and principals and everything not backing up the teachers. So I started my own company. And, you know, today I'm one of the happiest 67-year-olds you'd ever meet, and I'll probably work until I'm 95.
Mm-hmm.
I love what I do.
Kind of tug us, you know, we're going to change heads real quick from the topic of polite society. Kind of tell us about, you host, you're the executive host of a couple of television programs and radio. Kind of tell us, in your own business sense, how do you manage all of this and instill the particular topic within your own staff and your own company?
Well, it's easy because I've been doing it for so long that I really, every day is a new opportunity for me.
Mm-hmm.
The Born Before 64 came out of a desire to create programming for people that were born before 1964, the boomers, because I've always been this way, I'm kind of a look ahead. You know, I'm the kind of entrepreneur that sees things in the future and needs to see where we can really change, make, you know, things different. And I saw that these boomers, nobody was doing anything about them. Nobody was really concentrating on what they were going to do in the future. And a lot of people just thought, like our parents who were 65 or 70 and they retired at 55, that the boomers, when they got to be that age, were going to just retire into a rocking chair or go play golf. Nobody realized that they were not going to do that, that they were going to continue to work, that they were going to continue to do things different than their parents. So I actually think, thanks to a wonderful group in Northern Kentucky, decided to create this television show about the loves, their lives, technology, jobs, everything about them. So in that sense, that was something that I wanted to create, not only for them, but for me, because I knew that there was going to be a time when I was going to feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I actually am very fortunate that I can juggle different, you know, different things that I do as a producer, because I have a great group of people that are contractual to me that help me stay where I need to be. And, you know, I've collected a wonderful team of people, or put a team together, that we all have different personalities, but that we can work together very effectively. And, you know, I really like to learn new things all the time. So creating television programming and doing what you do now, as far as being a host, it's exciting for me to meet all these new people. And this career change has been one of the best I probably ever had.
Wow. So how, kind of tell us, if you don't mind, the executive producer, what, how do you actually become an executive producer? You just manage the entire show and produces it, or tell us what is
actually you were really one of the creators with the rest of the team in creating the financing and creating the actual product. I mean, I do a little bit more than just the executive producer's job. I actually put the whole team together, the direction that we're going to go, the financial backing of it. And I'm a host as well. So, you know, it's fun to put that together, but that's exactly what an executive producer, they're in charge of a lot of different things. They're like the conductor of a symphony. They make sure everything is, they look over everyone and they decide, you know, with those different people, how the production is going to actually occur and actually going to be putting that whole thing together from start to finish.
Okay. And from that, you just have production meetings, and from the production meetings, then they come up with the whole outline of the show, and you just do the show. Now, the chef,
no,
you and I.
Not really.
Okay. Kind of tell us that process so we know.
No, I did that part of it. Yeah, I actually put the script together with them, if they want to put their input into it, or they come up with subject matter, or I get so many different people to contact me because of the radio show with new topics, that the Chef You and I show, I actually wanted to create because I wanted to, I live holistically, I wanted to teach other people to come back to the table to learn how to cook. And so we work with chefs from all over the country, all in, you know, outside of the country. And I source and I find different chefs I want to work with, or people will contact me and say, would you do a show for us? And we do it on location, not as often as we are on the road with it. And then we take the camera with us and create it, then edit it, and put the recipes in and put it up on the website. So there's a lot of work that goes into it.
So do you rent a studio for that, or you you have your own production?
No, actually we enter in production company, and we work with a lot of different, we have different studios that we work out of. And I mentor a lot of young actors and filmmakers. And actually, we used to rent studios, but we went back to a lot of the different teaching schools and studios and cable accesses, because we found that I have a regular television team that actually teaches in the broadcasting schools, right? And we found that we would get a lot of talent, a lot of new interns, a lot of different people by using and some of the cable access community TV stations today have some of the top equipment, just like regular television studios do, and they have the same type of television studio that most major broadcasting companies have. So there's ways that you can do all kinds of things. I own my own cameras. My husband is an editor, which makes it nice. My team has been in television for over 25 years, and then we have other stylists and other things that we put together for the shows. I've always done my radio shows independently of a big team of people because today with the internet, today with, you know, computers and stuff like that, we don't have to do, I mean, I script every radio show with an outline. I pre-interview all of my guests prior. I read the books as much as I can if they have a book. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes that people don't really see.
Wow. You know, kind of ironically, I talked to a couple of other hosts, and like, for example, our particular show, the way it came out to be was actually to address a block for SEO. Then we kept getting so many emails and calls about certain things, topics that we write. Then we said, okay, let's put this in a podcast-type environment and broadcast it live, and we can let people know when it came on. So it started like 30 minutes, then went to an hour because people had more questions, and then it came every day, and then it came to 4 hours a day. And there's really mushroom out of the past 4 months, more than we were looking to do it. It just happened to fall into it. Then someone picked it up on syndication because they were looking for additional programming, and it fit. But your advice to people who starting out, who's looking at it to get in to a full-time environment, or people who actually stumbled across it, what advice do you have them coming from a syndicated radio show, what they should be doing?
I actually self-syndicated because I've been on radio for many years, and I had sponsors. I didn't walk into it blindly. I actually had been on other people's shows, and so I knew that it hit, and I'm also an advertising and marketing person with my Tri-State connection, that I knew that I had to be, you know, self-supporting in that sense, and I had to have the sponsorships I needed to be able to do what I love to do. So, you know, when I teach anybody radio, I say, don't quit your day job quite yet. And unless you're Rush Limbaugh or someone that is really very well known, you're not going to make a lot of money in the field unless you use it for your company, your actual company, or you are very well funded. And today there's a lot of blog radio where it doesn't cost you really anything to do it, where you can do it off your computer at home. Radio is changing dramatically. And our television broadcasting is pre-recorded. We do some live, but today, you know, live television isn't, you know, and then we use YouTube and we use a lot of other media sources to market our programming. And so you're always looking to do new things to really put your name out there. So, I mean, you really, it's a lot of hard work. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
So that would be my advice to somebody that wanted to start. Don't give your dream up, but don't give up your day job until you've got that dream secure. You know, there's a lot of people that don't fund themselves well enough to be able to really be successful at it. I'm not saying don't take the risk. I'm saying take the risk, but have some backing.
Absolutely. Last words you'd like to leave us with?
Look for the dream. You know, the dream is out there. If you want, if you're in a dead-end job and you really want to change your life and be really happy and successful, become that entrepreneur. do something that you're going to be excited about, successful at, and that you're going to really enjoy life. I enjoy life every moment on this mm-hmm. earth because I'm doing something that I really, really love. And thank our creator, number one, and thank yourself and thank your family and all the people that support you and give them the praise that they need for you to be able to be successful. And then pat yourself out on the back, too.
Perfect. Give us your website address real quick how to contact you.
It's Katherine Raker, KatherineRaaker.com. And you'll see all of our television shows, our blogs, everything up under that brand. And I can't thank you enough for allowing me to be on your show today. And we'd love to invite you to do ours.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I mean, you gave us two shows here. So thank you for that.
We'll probably spin this
one off because we have a lot of people keep asking certain questions regarding podcasting syndication. So at least they have a place to go to try to get bits and pieces of things that's real short. Well, thank you.
Syndication wasn't really difficult at all. It was easy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you and have a great
day. Thank you, and you do too. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. Again, this has been another production of Apple Capital Group, the Core Business Show. Thank you guys for listening. We do ask you that you write comments in iTunes or share this on Google Plus and so forth. But you can download this episode on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio on blog.applecapitalgroup. Everybody, thank you for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.